Glad you're here this morning. Looking forward to getting to go through this lesson with you. We'll be talking about children. Children, one of life's great blessings. Proverbs 17, verse 6, children's children are the crown of old men, and the glory of children is their father. We talked about this, maybe it was in a class a little while back. The crown of old men are their grandchildren. But it works both ways, because the glory of children is their father. So the joy runs both ways throughout the family. And for those of you who are grandparents, you know this. You know what this feels like. And for many of us who are not, we look forward to it. I do. That may sound weird coming from me. I look forward to it. Look forward to the day when I get to see my children's children. And hopefully sit them on my knee as Joseph did his grandchildren and bring them up home. I hope so. I look forward to it. What an honor. What a blessing. The ancients understood the blessing of children. You remember, and we can think of examples in the Bible, when a woman was barren, it was heartbreaking. You remember Hannah there outside the tabernacle, desperately wanting a son. She goes to the Lord, prays with all of her heart. And you remember Eli is sitting outside the tabernacle. All he can see is her lips moving, and he thinks she's drunk. She's not. She was pouring her heart out to the Lord, wanting a child so very badly. But as we consider the blessing they are, raising children God's way is work. It is. You know, to be fair, even raising children according to the world's standard is work. Raising them God's way is a whole lot more work. It takes effort. It's a constant thing. I've got you there in Psalm 78. Start in verse 1. What a responsibility we have. Give ear, O my people, to my law. Incline your ears to the words of my mouth. I will open my mouth in a parable. I will utter dark sayings of old, which we have heard and known and our fathers have told us. We will not hide them from their children, telling to the generation to come the praises of the Lord and His strength and His wonderful works that He has done. They needed to know those things. Verse 5, for He established a testimony in Jacob and appointed a law in Israel, which He commanded our fathers that they should make known to their children, that the generation to come might know them, the children who would be born, that they might arise and declare to them, their children, that they may set their hope in God and not forget the works of God, but keep His commandments. And he goes on to say in verse 8, so they wouldn't be like their fathers, a stubborn and rebellious generation, a rebellious generation whose hearts weren't right with the Lord. They had a responsibility to pass that on to their children. So it's certainly a heavy burden, a responsibility that comes with it, not something to be taken lightly at all. But Psalm 127, they are a joy. Behold, children are a heritage from the Lord. The fruit of the womb is a reward. I love the word behold, by the way. Whenever you see it, it means look. Look at what I'm about to tell you. Pay attention. And it's followed by children are a heritage from the Lord. The fruit of the womb is a reward. Like arrows in the hand of a warrior, so are the children of one's youth. Happy is the man who has his quiver full of them. What a great description. So true. Now, for the man or woman who can't find it in their heart to love children, it's very likely the sign of major spiritual problems. I've only known of a couple people who said, I hate kids. I hate them. I can't stand them. I don't want them around me. Get them away from me. They had serious spiritual problems. And selfishness was chief among them. And maybe that is the whole reason they felt that way. They missed out on the joy of children because they couldn't stop thinking of themselves long enough. But here's the thing. I see the wisdom in elders and deacons being fathers. It does make sense. We have a responsibility as fathers to teach wisdom to our children. But they teach us stuff all the time. We think about our responsibility to teach them. And absolutely. But you learn so much from them every day, if you'll pay attention. So, turn to Luke 18. Luke 18. Start verse 15. Jesus is with his disciples. You notice in verse 15, people are bringing children to him. Verse 15 says, they also brought infants to him that he might touch them. But when the disciples saw it, they rebuked them. But Jesus called them to him and said, let the little children come to me and do not forbid them, for of such is the kingdom of God. Assuredly, I say to you, whoever does not receive the kingdom of God as a little child will by no means enter it. We need to learn to be good observers of children, especially their hearts and the way that they look at things with an innocence and a purity. We can miss it, and this life can steal that from us, and it will, and it can happen very early if we're not careful. But looking at the way they approach things, and I want us to do some of that this morning. With this particular instance, look at Matthew 19. I have it up here for you. Children were brought to him so he could bless them. Verse 13, the little children were brought that he might put his hands on them and pray, and the disciples rebuked them. And we're told he is very ill with his disciples for that attitude. They basically said, their attitude is, look, this is Jesus. Jesus is a busy man. He doesn't have time for this stuff. Get these kids out of here. And Jesus is furious with that kind of attitude. He wanted them to be brought to him. And love, I have up here for you, Mark 10, verse 16. And just picture this. I mean, don't just read it. Jesus, the Son of God, deity taking on flesh. These kids come in, he picks them up in his arms. Can you imagine the Son of God holding your child and laying his hands on them and blessing them? Just that image of how much he loved them. Loved his children. They possess qualities that the disciples needed to have, as he tells them. A child is innocent. They trust their parents. They do, don't they? They will, when they are little, they will believe anything you tell them. They expect you to be able to answer every question and solve every problem that they have. May God help us to never ruin that trust. I hope they will always feel that trust in their parents. Another thing they do is love freely, and you know this. Eowyn should wear a sign around her neck that says free hugs. If she hadn't gotten you this morning already, she will before it's over. And we don't tell her to do that stuff. She just does. They love to love. We get to see that in them, in that innocence. So, let's look at some lessons this morning that we can learn from children. I should have entitled it Lessons from a Burger King Playground, because that's where I observed this stuff. I watched these things taking place. We were on a daddy-daughter date, and for dads, I would encourage you, if you have daughters, do that. Do that. It's very, very important. We love our kids, and they know that, but when you take time, especially something about with daughters, you take time out and you go sit with them and just share a meal. It doesn't have to be spending a bunch of money and take sandwiches to a park. It doesn't matter. But you get there and you're listening to her and you're talking with her. Put your phone away, by the way. Turn that thing off and just give her that time. It is so important and so special, because we are teaching them what godly men look like. Or we may be teaching them what godly men don't look like. Hopefully that's not the case. They look to us. They need that bond. We need to take it. So if you're not doing that, guys, I encourage you to. You need to. Put her. Look at her. Listen to her. The things that she is saying. So after we finish lunch, I let Eowyn go play on the playground. That thing is like four levels. It's a monster. If I was a child, I would just be lost and enjoy to see such a monstrosity. But I let her go. Here's some things I noticed. Children genuinely want to love each other. They do. They want to be together. They want to spend time together. They want to have fun together. And it doesn't matter what they look like. There were like eight kids in that playground that day. Some were black. Some were white. Some were Hispanic. They didn't all speak the same language. Do you know what they did? Which ones do you think played together? All of them. Every single one. They couldn't care less about what they looked like. They were all over each other. Eowyn walked up to one and said, hi, I'm Eowyn. She said, hi, Eowyn. I'm Elaine. Do you want to go see this slide? And you know what her answer was. Sure. And off they go. Do I get that? Do I get that lesson? Acts chapter 17, verse 26. And he made from one blood every nation of men to dwell on the face of the earth. He's determined their pre-appointed times and the boundaries of their dwellings. He made from one blood every nation of men. If you're a human being in this room right now, you are kin. You are descended from the same person. You are a son or daughter of Eve. You know what Eve's name means? Life giver or mother of all living. So if you're a human being, you descended from Eve, just like every other human being. We have that kinship and that bond. And so many times we don't think about it, do we? We don't even consider it. But kids, they see it. Hey, you're a kid, I'm a kid, let's go do kid stuff. And they don't let all of these barriers get in the way of that. That is an important lesson that I need to learn. How can I be more like this? Go to Matthew 22. Matthew 22. We'll start in verse 36. You're familiar, just to set it up with you. A lawyer comes to Jesus and he's going to ask him this question: which is the greatest commandment in the law? That's verse 36. Verse 37, Jesus starts to answer him. He says, "You shall love the Lord your God with all your heart, with all your soul, and with all your mind. This is the first and great commandment. And the second is like it. You shall love your neighbor as yourself. On these two commandments hang all the law and the prophets." So he answers the first question: you love God. And then the next question is, you love others. You love your neighbor as yourself. It's interesting to me. Do you see how close loving God and loving others run together? I mean, they're right there next to each other. They hinge on one another. If I don't love God like I should, I will never love anybody else. And this is Jesus speaking, but this is not new. You go back to Leviticus 19. I think I have it up here for you. Yeah, verse 18. "You shall not take vengeance nor bear any grudge against the children of your people, but you shall love your neighbor as yourself." Why? "Because I am God," he says. "You love them because of who I am. You belong to me. This is who I am. This is who you're to be." And Jesus repeats it. This idea has always been present in God's mind. So here's a question for you and me. Do I genuinely want to love my neighbor as myself? Because until I do, my growth as a child of God will be stunted. I'll never be the disciple I'm supposed to be until I love others like He expects me to. Children, they get that. Here's something else. They genuinely want to help each other out. Eowyn is not the most athletic child. When she tries to climb those platforms that I was talking about, it takes her about four times as long as it does everybody else. And she sounds like she's dying. She's grunting and pulling. And I just sit there and watch. And it's horrifying for me, because as a daddy, what I want to do is go pick her up and put her up where she wants to go. But I don't do it. I let her go. And she's pulling, and I hear her saying, "Almost there." And as I watched in horror, this little girl comes running back. Because other kids are running past her. I mean, they're just going up and down. They're taller and stronger. And this little girl comes running back. She says, "Hey, do you need some help?" And Anne was like, "Yeah." So, and they've done this before. One girl will grab her arms and another girl will push her legs. That's terrifying to watch too. But they get her up there. And what stood out to me, this little girl had other stuff she wanted to do. But she saw somebody needed some help. And so she turned around, stopped what she wanted to do, and came and helped my daughter so they could go do it together. There's a lesson in this for us. It's called compassion, right? You know what compassion is? Here's a dictionary definition: to have pity, a feeling of distress through the ills of others. But you know what it means. You see somebody in a bad situation and you feel for them and you want to help them through it. Kids have this. Kids show this. Well, more on that in a second. Jesus had this. Jesus was compassionate. Go to Matthew 9. Let's start there. We'll look at three examples. Matthew chapter 9, verse 36. The fact that He's deity, in my mind, makes this all the more incredible. Because He is so much higher and so much beyond His creation. But He is so very interested in them. Matthew 9, verse 36. "But when He saw the multitudes, He was moved with compassion for them, because they were weary and scattered like sheep having no shepherd. He saw their troubles and he wanted to help them. Turn over a few chapters, chapter 15, verse 32. This is during the feeding of the 4,000. Jesus called his disciples to himself and said, "I have compassion on the multitude, because they have now continued with me 3 days and have nothing to eat. I do not want to send them away hungry, lest they faint on the way." Again, being shown there. Let's look at one more. Chapter 20 of Matthew, verse 29. Jesus is coming out of Jericho, and he's got a huge group of people following him. And there are these two blind guys sitting on the side of the road. In verse 30, "Behold, two blind men sitting by the road, when they heard that Jesus was passing by, cried out, saying, 'Have mercy on us, O Lord, Son of David.' And the multitude told them to be quiet." Well, they don't listen. They just keep yelling it even louder. "Have mercy on us, O Lord, Son of David." Verse 32, "Jesus stood still and called to them and said, 'What do you want me to do for you?' In 33, they said to him, 'Lord, that our eyes may be opened.' And Jesus had compassion and touched their eyes, and immediately their eyes received sight, and they followed him." He had compassion on them. Turn to Luke 10. There's another who had compassion. Someone we're familiar with, the Good Samaritan. We won't go through this entire thing. This is right off of what we had just read earlier regarding those commandments. And there's a guy who wants to justify himself. And he said, "Well, who's my neighbor? If I'm to love my neighbor, okay, well, who's my neighbor?" And so Jesus gives him this answer. And of course, you have the man who was set upon by thieves and stripped down. They rob him. They leave him there. He's beaten and bloody. Leave him to die. Verse 31, "By chance, a certain priest came down that road. And when he saw him, he passed by on the other side. After that, a Levite, when he arrived at the place, came and looked, and then passed by on the other side." Verse 33, "But a certain Samaritan, as he journeyed, came where he was, and when he saw him, he had compassion." And you know what happens. He goes, he bandages his wounds, he puts him on his mount, he takes him to the inn, tells him to take care of him, gives him money. If he needs anything else and this doesn't cover it, let me know when I come back, I'll take care of it. And of course, Jesus' question is, okay, now which one did right? And the answer's easy. The one who saw this man in need and did what he needed to take care of him. Ironically, you've got a Levite and a priest who should have been the godly people, just ignoring him. Or looking at him and then ignoring him. So, what about kids? Do kids show compassion on each other? Gave you that example earlier. They do. Anaya was riding with me in a car, and she notices everything. She sees everything. And we were driving through where Walmart is, and she said, "Dad, what is that guy sitting over there on the ground with a sign in his hand?" And I looked over and I said, "Well, sweetie, he's asking people for help. He doesn't have any food to eat." And I heard her take in a gasp and say, "Well, we got to go help him." That is the only correct answer in her mind. The only logical answer. Here's somebody who needs help. We can help. Therefore, we must help. This is the only way that little mind goes. I wish mine did. Because what happens with mine sometimes? I let excuses start coming in there as to why I shouldn't help. I start jumping through all of these hoops as to why, we were busy, and I don't have any cash on me right now. Well, I don't know this guy. All of that stuff comes in. But in that child's mind, here is a need that needs to be met. It can be met by us. Why are you still looking at me? That's the logic. And that's a pure and innocent heart. And I know, why don't we help? Sometimes, when situations like that come up, why don't we help? Because we're afraid we're going to get taken advantage of, right? That's the honest reason. We're afraid this guy's lying, and we're going to get taken advantage of. So we say things like, "Well, what if this guy asking for food is going to take my money and buy drugs with it? Well, what if this guy asking for some money is just too lazy to get out there and work for himself? Well, what if this guy really needs help, and I'm acting like the Levite and the priest? Do I ask myself that question?" What if he takes advantage of you? So what? That's on him. What if I could have helped him and I didn't? That's on me. See the difference? These kids don't go through all those hoops. They don't chase around that maze. They just get right to the point. I appreciate that. I think I can learn a lot from that. There's one other thing that I noticed on the playground that they did. They will warn others. And they have no qualms about it. They will do it loudly and again until it's heeded. The little girl, she was older than the others. She said, "Don't stand at the bottom of the slide. Somebody's going to hit you." And it was about to come out of my mouth. I'm like, "Good girl. I'm glad you get them." That wasn't what the little kids wanted to hear. But she told them anyway. Probably speaking from experience. Anaya is very vocal and loud. You guys know that. With her warnings, she will say things like, "That man doesn't need to smoke cigarettes. It's bad for you. That stuff killed my pawpaw Bobby." And she's not doing it to be snooty. And she's not doing it to be hateful. She is doing it because she honestly is concerned about the health of somebody she doesn't even know. Am I like that? Am I honestly concerned about the health of people I may not even know? And I'm talking about spiritual health, especially. Will I say things that need to be said? I appreciate her courage. There was a time when, this was a while ago, she would say things and my knee-jerk reaction was to go, "Oh, I don't do that anymore." If she's right. She would say, "Daddy, that woman's not dressed modestly." And it echoes and carries. And my old reaction was, "What? It's not anymore." Because if a 4-year-old can figure out what's modest and what's not, then a 24-year-old ought to be able to. And a 34 and 44 and so on. Maybe it'll lead to a conversation. What are they going to do? Tell her she's wrong? So I let her go. I don't want to stunt her zeal in any way. But it's just an honest assessment. She's not being ugly. She's not being hateful. She's not trying to make them feel bad. She's just looking and saying, "That ain't right." And then she says it literally out loud so everybody can hear it. If we love people, we will warn them. We will. It's uncomfortable, isn't it? You want to say stuff, but you're like, "It's going to be awkward." Open rebuke is better than love carefully concealed. Faithful are the wounds of a friend, but the kisses of an enemy are deceitful. I wonder how many times I've been an enemy because I didn't say what I should have said. Ointment and perfume delight the heart. The sweetness of a man's friend gives delight by hearty counsel. All those in Proverbs 27. You and I giving hearty counsel. Turn to Ezekiel 33. As Christians, we serve in the position of a watchman. We are to be watchful, both for ourselves and on the behalf of others. Ezekiel 33, look at verse 1. Again, the word of the Lord came to me, saying, "Son of man, speak to the children of your people, and say to them, when I bring the sword upon the land, and the people of the land take a man from their territory and make him their watchman, when he sees the sword coming upon the land, if he blows the trumpet and warns the people, then whoever hears the sound of the trumpet and does not take warning, if the sword comes and takes him away, his blood is on his own head. He heard the sound of the trumpet, but he did not take warning. His blood shall be upon himself. But he who takes warning will save his life. But, verse 36, if the watchman sees the sword coming and does not blow the trumpet, and the people are not warned, and the sword comes and takes any person from among them, he is taken away in his iniquity, but his blood I will require at the watchman's hand. So you, son of man, I've made you a watchman for the house of Israel. Therefore you shall hear a word from my mouth and warn them for me." He basically goes on and says the same thing. If you do it and warn them, and they don't listen to you, that's on them. But if you fail to warn them, that's your fault. That's on you. Very sobering thought for us. Are we faithful watchmen? Or are we falling asleep on the job? Turn to Matthew 18. Matthew 18. Do yourself a favor. pay attention to the innocent hearts of children. They will teach you all kinds of stuff if we would just take the time to watch them and listen to the things that they say. You get a glimpse in them of the kind of innocence and trust and humility that God wants us to have. And here's a reminder for us, especially us as parents. Matthew 18, look at verse 6. But whoever causes one of these little ones who believe in me to sin, it would be better for him if a millstone were hung around his neck and he were drowned in the depth of the sea. Woe to the world because of offenses, for offenses must come. But woe to that man by whom the offense comes. Now, I understand the little ones here in the context are referring to those who believe in God. But can you make an application to children we've been given responsibility over too? If I become a stumbling block to them, if I do anything that harms their innocence and their purity, can I expect the same kind of treatment from my Lord? And just think about some things. Am I, as a father, behaving in a way that's putting a bad example before my girls? Am I giving them evil instead of good? Jesus is not happy about that. Am I, as a father and as a husband, not being the man I should be? And my girls are seeing that. Am I giving them evil instead of good as an example? Jesus ain't happy if that's the case. Woe to me. Woe to me if that's the case. So let me ask you this. Is your heart pure? Have you been made pure by the blood of Christ? And if you were, are you still pure in the blood of Christ? We need to answer that individually. We can help you in any way. Please come forward. We stand in the center.